You're the big, big boss. You tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job. But I don't like your attitude.
Why don't we talk about the war of art today? And
a little funny though, because I think of you as an art of war guy.
I am an art of war guy. The Art of War is tough. It's a very romantic sounding book, and people like to say, well, you know, Sun Tzu, know your enemy, know yourself. You know, they quote these little, you know, small passages so they seem enlightened. If you really dive into The Art of War, it's tough to get through.
But don't you think that's funny? Like, did you ever imagine, like, back when you were maybe going through Navy SEAL Hell Week, that your first podcast book topic would be The War of Art, not The Art of War?
The Art of War, right. And here we are.
All right, so.
Who knew?
So I think it's interesting because we're reading the same books now, right? So I mean, 2 years ago, we probably didn't read the same books, I would say. I read the War of Art about a year and a half ago. Well, I listened to it on audiobook, and so you just read it this past month. So it's a little fresher for you than for me. But is this the first book we've both ever read? Besides, I assume as a child you read all the Star Trek novels. So we have that in common. But then, besides that, this.
This might be.
Now tell me, who do you think you are? Besides a person who happens to be in charge.
Welcome back to the Leadership in Tech podcast series. This is a special two-part episode, with the second part being released next Thursday. Today, Zach and Errol will begin discussing the book, The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. They dive into it in detail, discussing the ideas of resistance and how they affect not only individuals, but teams in tech and everywhere else as well. By being prepared with a contingency plan to start, as we've covered previously, you can learn how to avoid resistance and accomplish the best possible results. Stay with us after the show for more info on the Leadership in Tech podcast series and the technology on-ramp. We are proud to present the Leadership in Tech podcast series, Season 2, Episode 47, The War of Art, Part 1.
Maybe you got lucky, maybe you worked real hard, and just maybe that doesn't make you smart.
We are live.
Unbelievable.
We got to get a new introduction.
I say that on every phone call I'm on, every conversation I have. You think it gets old?
Never. It never gets old. Oh, man. So what are we talking about today?
It sounds like you've been reading lately.
I've been reading the books from Seth Godin's Alt-MBA, which I don't think we talked about yet, but I finished that up.
Is that going to be like a whole episode?
I think it should be. It was great. It's a month long. You're committed to kind of 3 days a week on calls, Sunday being generally all day. And you get like, I don't know, two or three projects a week. And you have to, you know, you have to write them up. You have to ship them by a deadline. You have to get critiqued by it, critiqued by the people in your cohort. And the schedule looks tough when you look at it. But then when you're going through it, you're like, this is brutal.
This is the worst.
Yeah. Seth Godin, though, he preps you and he sends you a bunch of reading material. Because what's beautiful about Seth Godin is he talks about, you know, one of the books he sends you is called Steal Like an Artist by a guy named Austin Kleon. And, you know, Seth talks about how nothing's really original. And, you know, you don't plagiarize, but you steal and you make things your own. And Seth Godin's, one of his big things is resistance. And it turns out that he kind of took that phrase from a guy named Stephen Pressfield in The War of Art. And, you know, he doesn't, like I said, Seth Godin doesn't make any bones about it. He kind of amplifies that whole thing. So why don't we talk about The War of Art today? And
a little funny, though, because I think of you as an Art of War guy.
I am an Art of War guy. The Art of War is tough. It's a very romantic sounding book, and people like to say, well, you know, Sun Tzu, know your enemy, know yourself. You know, they quote these little, you know, small passages so they seem enlightened. If you really dive into The Art of War, it's tough to get through.
But don't you think that's funny? Like, did you ever imagine, like, back when you were maybe going through Navy SEAL Hell Week, that your first podcast book topic would be The War of Art, not The Art of War?
The Art of War, right. And here we are.
All right. So
who knew?
I mean, I think it's interesting because we're reading the same books now, right? So I mean, 2 years ago, we probably didn't read the same books, I would say. I read The War of Art about a year and a half ago. Well, I listened to it on audiobook. And so you just read it this past month. So it's a little fresher for you than for me. But is this the first book we've both ever read? Besides, I assume as a child you read all the Star Trek novels. So we have that in common. But then besides that, this.
This might be, but you turned me on to Seth Godin. You know, you brought me to that. We went to that one day seminar, and I had never even heard of the guy. And then,
that was a good seminar too.
It was great. It was fantastic. This might be the first book that we've both read and are actively talking about. So, for those of you who don't know, Stephen Pressfield talks about something called the resistance. And I'll just read. He defines the resistance as any act that rejects immediate gratification in favor of long-term growth, health, or integrity. Or expressed another way, any act that derives from our higher nature instead of our lower. Any of these will elicit resistance. So basically, anything good you want to do, anything for the greater good of, for yourself, for your business, for your community, for your family, you will encounter resistance.
All right, so like a perfect example, one that we've already talked about on this podcast many times. I've come to believe that it's a fact that if I take cold showers, I'll be healthier. Yet every time I get in my mind I'm going to start taking cold showers, by the time I walk up the stairs, I'm like, I have a million excuses why I'm not going to do it. And then I definitely don't do it. That is sort of an example of resistance. I want to be warm. I don't want to be cold. I'm going to skip that thing. Even though long term, I think it probably would do a little bit of good.
The excuses you make are the examples of the resistance.
Right.
So I was listening to a guy named David Mamet. And he did, he wrote Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross, The Untouchables, and so he's a dramatic writer. And I was just listening to some of his stuff, and he talks about something called the Yetzirah. You know, David's Jewish, and if I'm mispronouncing it, but it's a Jewish saying. He basically talks about the evil inside of all of us, you know, our dark side that's trying to corrupt you, right? And that's the resistance, you know, and he talks about it in the form of, well, he talks about it in a lot of different forms, but, you know, he gives his examples like, well, you know I need to pay my taxes, but these taxes are so high, so it's really okay, and they're kind of unfair, so it's okay if I don't pay the taxes, but everybody else should, right? You know, the resistance, going up to do the cold shower, resistance, it's just, we'll get into, because we did have a good conversation yesterday about it. But a couple of topics in the book, because I marked up this entire book because I loved it so much.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
You're a highlighter?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, not when I'm pleasure reading, but a book like this.
All right.
The book is broken down into the resistance and then combating resistance. So, you know, when he talks about the resistance and procrastination, he says, we don't tell ourselves, I'm never going to write my symphony. Instead, we say, I'm going to write my symphony. I'm just going to start tomorrow. Right?
I'm a notorious procrastinator. I consider that one of my finest skills. Like that, I mean, I would say the ability to get something done at the very last minute, right? Well, which is procrastination.
Yeah, but he talks about also the problem with the resistance is it becomes then habit.
Right.
Right? So you become really good at procrastinating. Now your procrastination is a habit.
Totally.
So, you know, let's talk about a little bit of what we were...
Yeah, so there's a couple of ways we could go. So first, I think it's important to show, like, you and I both face the resistance. Like, it's universal, right? Like, you as a successful, like, entrepreneur face the resistance. Myself, as an entrepreneur, face resistance. So let's first talk a little bit about how we face resistance, and then we can get into, like, how our teams and tech and, like, the widespread nature.
Yeah.
What's your main? I just gave two of mine. Like, I'll admit I'm a procrastinator. I, like, learned how to do that in high school, doing homework, like, for each class in the previous class as opposed to the night before. And I definitely, for things like cold showers, I do not combat the resistance well. What's your, like, sort of top one?
I mean, sometimes I feel like there's so many of them. Like, they just become ingrained in my life and part of my resistance, I think, sometimes acknowledging my resistance.
What about writing? Because you write a lot. You write a lot more than I do.
Yeah, you know, that was, you know, and I got past that a little bit through, you know, Alt-MBA. So there's always a resistance, and the resistance there in writing was, it's weird, but it was kind of like, well, I'll be inspired. I have to wait till I get inspired.
Right.
Right? So I'm just going to wait till I get inspired, and then I'm going to write something. Well, sitting around waiting for inspiration doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. You have to do something to create something that gets you inspired, right? And I learned that from Seth Godin in his class. It's like you get inspired by doing it, right? So just start writing and then publish it. And if it sucks, it's okay. Nobody really cares that much. And then you'll find inspiration. So it's still... I don't know what the resistance is to sitting down and writing, but it's still really hard. And I think it's because I still go back to, well, I don't have any good ideas right now. I'll know when I need to sit down and start writing and then get inspired by writing. It still comes back to the same shit, you know? I'm just trying to find a reason not to do it. Well, I'm not ready. I've got to, you know, it's funny you bring up writing. When I got past that, I probably wrote like 6 blog posts, you know, in like 2 hours.
Right.
And it was amazing. Like, I felt so good, right? Of course I did, because it was a good thing to do. It was writing. It was inspiration. It's what I'm supposed to do. It's what I need to do for the business. At the end, I felt really good. Just like after you're done with your shower, right? Or after we're done with our exercise, or after we're done of a day of great eating for our diet, we're like, that was amazing. Why can't I do it every day? Well, because of the resistance. Because
it's back tomorrow, right? Like, even if you had that 6 hour, that couple hours, 6 blog posts, the next day it's back.
It doesn't go away. And that's one of the things that that Pressfield talks about. He's like, it's forever. It's always there, and it will never go away. Where is it? It's in there somewhere.
So segue on writing. So, you know, I think where this is most applicable in tech is that technology projects, you know, have software developers. And, I think developing software is not unlike writing, and that it is inherently a creative, sort of emotionally intelligent endeavor. And so software developers tend to feel the same way about the code they're writing as writers feel about writing, except in technology, you have teams of people working on a project. So maybe a book, you have one author and you're battling the resistance alone, or maybe you have co-authors and you're going against each other. But in a tech project, maybe you have 10 software developers, each with their own resistances, and together they have to come ship this, you know, big thing. And so it sort of compounds the resistance because everybody has their own resistance. And as a leader, you have 10 of them. And, you know, all together, all 11 of you, even you with your own resistance, is on the hook to deliver something that is scary.
But, you know, and it's kind of a, you can't put your finger on the resistance, right? It's just, you know, one of the things about resistance is that if you, the more overwhelmed you feel by it, that's an indication the more you have to act on it, right? I cannot sit down and write.
Therefore, you have to write.
Now you have to sit down and write. Well,
that's what, like, some of the advice people give is the only thing you should do today is the thing that you most don't want to do. So we all have 20, you know, I have a list sitting in front of me of 20 things on it. 19 of them definitely don't have to be done today, even though they're stressing me out. This podcast is one of them, so we're getting one of them done. The other 19 are stressing me out. I feel like I have to do them. Gotta. Really, none of them matters. The only thing that matters is doing the one I least want to do, which I guarantee you is buried somewhere down there that I don't even see it. It might not even be on the list.
Right. It's probably not on the list because if you put it on the list,
I might do it.
Then you might have to face the fact that you need to do it. You know, that's, you know, it's pretty basic. I give that advice too, because when we talk about, you know, as I get deeper into my business and, you know, you get repeat clients and they say, okay, love the broad stuff you're doing. Now we need to drill down. And that's, you know, when I'm like, look, get ready for drilling down, because these concepts are easy to understand, but they're really hard to do. Well, what can be so hard about it? You know, again, you hear me talk about the planning process a lot. Yeah, it's very simple. Have your situation, your mission, your actions, who's in charge, what are your contingencies, how are you going to communicate? Very simple. Now go ahead and do it. And then when they give me an action plan, I'm like, there's no actions here. You're still talking in generalities. I want to know exactly what you're going to be doing.
Because they have their own resistance.
Because they have their own resistance, right? And then, you know, that's when I'm able to remind them, like, look, I warned you, this is hard. Okay, so what is the problem about writing down what you need to do? Well, I just kind of do it. I feel it. I'm like, okay, that's all right. I'm not really sure that that engenders a lot of confidence in people. So, you know, I've seen people have the resistance on the most basic aspects of planning, and then prioritization. Okay, well, tell me what's the most important thing, and I'll get just what you said, like these things that can be done in like 2 months, and even if they're not done then, they're okay. Like, well, why are you doing that now? It sure sounds like this needs to be done, right? It sounds like this program needs to be written, or it sounds like this go-to-market plan needs to get started. That sounds pretty important. Ah, yeah, well, we're going to ease into that. Okay.
Right, like, so you're combating other people's resistance. They may or may not be aware that they have resistance, right? It's just manifesting itself in their actions. And then if you have a team, maybe you have 3, 4, 10 people who you have to wrangle with individual unique resistances.
So in tech, we've talked about it. Now I'm seeing it with clients. It's the big resistance, or is it needs to be perfect? Is that an excuse? I'm not so sure that's the resistance as much as it's an excuse. I mean, I guess it's all kind of one and the same. But
yeah, it's one and the same. I mean, that's the topic I feel like is the most talked about conversation on all tech teams. It usually comes up with me. I have a guideline. You know, you made me create my guidelines. We already had an episode on that. And the number one guideline for me is my teams will ship every day. We will ship software every day. And, you know, that just, like, loads up almost everyone. I mean, it like drives people crazy. Engineers, programmers, developers, coders, because a lot of people feel like quality is directly, maybe inversely related to speed. And so to ship every day means you are shipping lower quality things, and people feel good about themselves shipping higher quality things. And so that leads into your perfectionism. If I want to ship something perfect, it's going to take longer. If I want to do it less perfect, then you're telling me to do crappy work. And so it's really almost a religious argument, I feel like, in tech. You could talk about it from every angle for a year.
But in reality, it's not. Because the beauty about tech, especially, is it can constantly be upgraded. So this idea of shipping a perfect software project or line of code or whatever it is ridiculous, because somebody's waiting. The customer's waiting. The customer's not getting it. The customer wants really good, the best you've got. And then the customer is going to get really excited when you say, oh, by the way, we're going to keep improving it, but here's the really good product right now. Get to work. Start using it. There's like, when I hear people say that now, I'm like, does the customer want something that's good, or does he want to wait a year for something that's going to be perfect, which will never happen? And, you know, of course, everybody, like, the resistance is in answers, too. Like, yeah, but this is different. Okay. I know I shouldn't cheat on my wife, but you can understand with her, right? This is a little different.
Right. It's everywhere. So, I mean, it gets more complicated. Like, so the arguments are nuanced, right? And eventually we'll bring up things like technical debt. And I think we're going to have an episode coming up soon on this podcast about technical debt. But, you know, if I do something halfway, am I introducing technical debt on the system that will take more time to clean up later? You know, sort of subtleties like that. But it's the bigger picture, which is, you know, the customer is paying a certain amount of money, right? And you can only do what you can do in that amount of money, right? If you can't build a space shuttle on the budget of a web page, you can't do it. And so if they're paying for the budget of a web page, you can't build a space shuttle. And so, you know, a lot of, like, it gets pretty deep. Like, a lot of programmers, I think, lament that the world is broken, right? Like, why is the customer have a budget of a web page? What is wrong with the world? I want to build a spaceship. Well, the customer has a business, right? And their business operates a certain way, and they have a budget, and it's all very complex. And so in this, like, sort of insanely complex ecosystem with millions of, like, angles, like, it probably is broken, but it's also not broken, but it is what it is. And you have to be able to recognize how you can fit in and not sort of get caught up in your own resistance to, like, think things should be a different way because you're afraid to do something less than perfect.
Well, yeah, you know, and the other thing about that is it's opposed to that excuse goes to it goes to so much. I'm almost stuck because I have so many things going through my head. But the customer knows how much money they're paying, right? So when I go to a customer, like when I first started, I was selling the biggest package I had, right? This is everything,
right?
And for $30,000, you can have this, okay?
And I'll even throw in a cookie, a chocolate chip cookie.
Right. So, you know, it took a long time. And, you know, part of it was because, you know, I didn't know enough to know that just what you were talking about. No, the customer knows that for a couple $1,000s and a couple of hours, they know exactly what they're going to get. They know that they want, you know, somebody to come in, get people thinking a little bit, do a little inspiration, and, you know, I hate it, but yeah, sometimes check the box. We need some leadership training. Bring in Errol for a couple hours. We're good. All I can do is deliver the best product I can in that 2 hours. Okay. And that was hard. Like, I would jam stuff in.
Right.
You know, and somebody would be like, no, give your best 2 hours. Pick a couple topics and go with it. And if you feel compelled, Errol, put a caveat. Look, this is not going to change the world. This is just to get you to think. This is, hopefully, you'll really like what I say and call me back for more. Like, it took me a while to get my arms around that. And now my arms around it are perfectly. Well, Errol, where do you think we should start? I think you should start with an hour general overview. If you like me, call me back, and I'll give you my best hour. It's not going to change the world, but you're going to feel really good about it.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you think of that difficult journey for you to understand that, that's how it is for every single software developer who is asked to do something in less time than, you know, $30,000 with a chocolate chip cookie.
It's actually, the customers aren't dumber than you think. They're smarter than you think.
Right.
They're like, no, I know. I know that X dollars only gets me this much. I need X dollars of that. That's what I mean.
Yes, totally. There is no amount of time you will hear a software developer saying, this is why you don't let the business users design the software. This is why you don't like to let the customer pick the features. It's the resistance, right? It's the resistance coming up with any excuse possible to like mix things up, because it's scary to just do your best hour, right? It was scary for you to design your best hour and deliver
that. I can give you so much more, though. I can give you so much more. You don't even know what you're missing. Like, no, we know what we're missing. We know.
Yeah,
we know.
Yes.
We know perfectly well. But, you know, look, and it comes back to the same thing we always say. And this is where, you know, this is where you kind of turn the corner. Like, when you're the boss, you get to say those things. You get to say, that's fine. You don't think delivering is important. You don't think giving your best hour is important, and you're going to fight me on it. This place is not for you. It's just simply not for you. And that's okay. Go to the other place that does the opposite, and you'll be very happy.
No, I mean, like, that's the truth. So, like, every company and team is sort of different. Like, there are hundreds of companies out there literally building space shuttles right now, right? You can go work there and not have any, you know, you can get to be perfect. Right. Space shuttles have to be perfect. They hire software engineers who write perfect software. Go get that job, right? There are millions of companies developing web pages. Web pages do not have to be perfect. So it's all about finding the environment in the team that sort of suits what you want to do. Right, but you can't work on a web page team and build a space shuttle.
You know, so here's, I found it in the book, and I'll just read it verbatim. Are you paralyzed with fear? That's a good sign. Fear is good, like self-doubt. It's an indicator. It tells us what we have to do. Remember our rule of thumb. The more scared we are of a work or calling, the more sure we can be that we have to do it. It's like biology. Okay, so... And the fact that it tells you that there's so many coders who are afraid of shipping, they know, I believe it, they know they have to. They just, whatever the resistance is, whatever the fear is, they're saying, not, you know, don't do it. And it could be something as simple as like when I started out, right? No, you don't know enough to know. You have to get my $30,000 package.
Right.
That's the package that's going to transform
your life. The only one that'll work.
It's the only thing that'll work for you. Because you really have nothing else going on in your world except for what I can offer you.
Right. Right. And, you know, and that's just one angle. I mean, you can go back to the writing angle as well. If I'm a software developer and I write, you know, 10 lines of code and I have to commit it to the, you know, code database so that Errol can see it. Well, Errol's going to see sort of my brain on a piece of paper. Errol's going to read my writing. Errol's going to judge me. Errol's going to think that maybe I'm not earning my salary. Errol's going to think maybe I'm not as talented as everyone to think. Errol's going to find that I made a mistake, so maybe I'd like to take 2 more hours and make sure I didn't make a mistake so that Errol doesn't happen to catch a mistake.
Right.
Now you're turning 1 hour into 3 hours, right? There's the consequences of shipping. You put a web web page out to the customers and they find an error. Well, now what happens? Now your team has caused an error. Maybe you've interrupted. Maybe you've ruined something in their business. Maybe you've cost them money. Maybe you've wasted them time. And now they're going to come back and have an uncomfortable conversation with you. Maybe you want to avoid uncomfortable conversations. Right. So you spend 20 hours trying to test to make sure you're not going to break their business. And then you still break their business. So there's a lot of different angles why shipping can be scary. And they all just feed right into that resistance, whichever particular brand of resistance sort of is for you.
True. And I don't think necessarily it's not, the resistance isn't something that's not valid. A lot of times it is. But, you know, then that goes to other things we've talked about, right? You know, eventually you've got to measure your courage, right? We talk about the Wim Hof method and actually stepping into the ice bath. That is a moment of courage. You have to just step in, right? Everything before and everything during and everything after doesn't happen unless you have the guts and step in that thing. Same thing. Everything before you do, the developer does, what happens afterwards, on and on, is all inconsequential to having the courage to ship your product. Now, I would tell you, right, if you ask me, and I'm starting to have these conversations, these very specific conversations, that if you're worried about these things, then you haven't put together your contingency plan. You haven't properly communicated to the customer. Here's what you're getting. Here's some things that can happen. We're going to, you know, whatever it is, that should mollify a lot of what's going on in this particular instance, the developer's head. You know, it's got to be a form of communication. Call it covering your ass if you want, but that's why it's so easy. Sure, you're covering your ass, but you're also communicating properly to the client, setting proper expectations. Here's where we are. Here's what we think it's going to be. You know, whatever it is. I don't know. What do you think about that? If you had to convince somebody and you gave them that kind of line, if you challenged them, in a nice way, we're not calling people cowards, but if you challenged, let's talk about our courage. Let's talk about how we're communicating to the client. Let's set their expectations properly. Let's have a plan for upgrades as necessary. I mean, how does that conversation go?
Well, so the problem is, I would tie in one angle. So I'm going to answer this question, but sort of through a story. In technology, there is this notion of sort of ageism, right? Like being an older developer is not necessarily better. Although, as you know, outside of code, with age sort of comes wisdom. So like there's a career path you follow. There was Zach, the junior programmer, Zach, the programmer, the lead, the boss. And I learned lessons all along those ways about life, right? So my resistance as a junior programmer or a programmer might have been, I don't like to get yelled at or like face any kind of anger by the customer. I don't like confrontation. I don't like people being mad at me. I'm a pleaser, right? So I'm not going to do anything that like would possibly make the business upset about me. And that was sort of my resistance. So I would like to test a lot or do whatever I could to just avoid that scenario. And so I worked on a project once where the customer had a very, very important financial system that they needed me to maintain. And it was a core element of their business. And it basically spit out numbers that had to be correct to like the eighth decimal place. And if a number wasn't correct to the eighth decimal place, it was spitting out numbers all day long, every day. If there ever came a time where the number was incorrect, they could lose millions of dollars. So an eighth decimal place, if it was ever wrong, they could lose millions of dollars. But
That's a lot.
But their budget was that of a web page. And so I say, oh, no. If that's going to could lose millions of dollars, you need to test this for, any change you make to the system, you need to test for 50 hours. Zach, we don't have 50 hours in our business. We're not paying for 50 hours. We can't do it. It's not there. You got to make these changes, and you got to do it on this budget, and you just got to do the best you can. And so, right there is sort of that that impossible decision that every developer faces where they think the world is broken, right? You can either bail out and say, forget it, go find someone else to do it, or you can say, I'll do my best. I'll do my best to what you can do, and, you know, we'll go from there. And so that's what I did. I took the project. I did it on their budget. I did my very best. I used to literally, this is not a lie, every once in a while I would wake up in the middle of the night and just be like, oh my God, did that one change change the seventh decimal place on that number? And they don't know about it. Like, oh my God. And so, and then I'd think about it for a few minutes, be like, no, no, I checked that. It's good. And I'd go back to sleep. So I sort of bore the burden of like the responsibility of how important this project was. So one day I get an email or I get a call. Zach, get over here right now. We see a wrong number. Like, holy shit. This is like my worst fear, right? I do not like confrontation with users or customers. I'm an introvert, right? So I walk over to their office and, you know, four of them are sitting in the office and they say, Zach, this number should be, you know, 1.3, but this says 1.2. How could this be? We're screwed. I say, oh, I'll look into it. I'll look into it right away. I'll go check it out. So I run off and I look into it and we troubleshoot and we find out that they're actually wrong and that the number is correct. And I go back and tell them, you know, the number is correct. You guys are looking at it wrong. This is the other thing. And they're like, okay, great. Amazing. And so we do that a couple of times and I get a little bit more comfortable having these very uncomfortable conversations, right? I show up every single time they have an issue with the software. You know, a year later, they're saying Zach is the best because he shows up and he talks to us every single time we have an issue, and we always work it out. And we never broke, we never lost them $1 million. We made a few mistakes in the system and we all worked together to make sure they were okay, but there was never catastrophe. But it was a growth opportunity for me to learn how to have these conversations and to learn that that there's a human side on top of the tech. It's not just about 10 hours or 20 hours on the tech or how the code is, but there's a communication and human and sort of collaboration side. And that's real, right? That's sort of as an important element of the project as any sort of technology thing that went into it, right? And so...
And it becomes your responsibility, like you were saying, the older and the younger generation, well, the older generation become the leaders.
Right. Yeah. So now I can try to pass that down. And so I say, look, you're going to make bugs. You're going to, you know, now we're working on a web page project. There's not $1 million thing on the line. Ship it. There's going to be problems. When there's problems, you go talk to the business and work it out and look them in the eye and work it out. And that will lead you to a better state than anything can ever lead you. Well, they don't like to talk to the business. They're scared of talking to the business. I used to be scared of talking to the business. And so that's the growth that sort of has to happen. And the things the leaders know that maybe the programmers don't know that has to like play into the team dynamics so that way you can do the right thing.
Right. I mean, so you know, in that sense, talking to the business for you isn't the resistance anymore. It's something you would prefer not to have to do, maybe just from the nature of your personality, but it's not this thing that's overwhelming you. And now it's how do you impart that wisdom on these people who are working for you now.
Right.
And that's, again, as we go back to this podcast, that is the art and the science of leadership, right? You've got to have all those things. You've got to allow people to be in uncomfortable situations. You have to trust that they're going to make mistakes, that they're going
to force them into a comfortable situation.
You have to force them into it, you know? And look, and like we said, if they are not willing to go there, that's no longer their fault if you keep them on and they start acting that way. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, it's, I don't know, you know, I'm working with a company right now and they're just getting the hang of this planning process. And they're realizing how hard it is. And I'm hearing the things that we talked about on the first episode. And it's the first time, you know, I was starting to think, and it's good, wow, I'm amazing. I've never had pushback yet. People are taking my stuff, running with it. and I'm starting to get some pushback. I'm starting to get, F it, I'm just going to do it myself. And I'm like, what? No.
Because you're in the knowledge work industry now. Like, these people are crazy. I'm crazy.
So it's hard. You can't, I'm never going to tell somebody that they're great and doing the right thing when they're not. I'm not going to tell them they're stupid. And it's a very hard, look, that's kind of the resistance too. And, you say, if you do that, that's okay, right? It's going to get done and there's a time and place. I said, but what are we doing for the next time? We're going to do this for the next time. No, next time we're going to do it your way because that's the right way. Okay, why don't we just do it the right way now? what did Stephen Pressfield write? We never say we're not going to do our symphony. We say, I'm going to do my symphony tomorrow. I literally heard it. No, Errol, I'm going to do it myself this time, but next time I'm going to do it your way because your way is the right way.
Like, right. Well,
aye, aye, aye. Okay. Right?
And so I think you're going to see more of this as you get, teams who are all at different stages in their career, different stages in their journey, different forms of the resistance. And like, how do those people work together? Which is why I always talk about, I feel like a broken record. It's in my business, it's no longer about the tech. Like, everybody knows how to write code. Everybody that I deal with in these technology companies knows how to write code. But teams can be so broken and so unable to work together because of things like this. And nobody looks at it, right? Everyone just wants to learn another programming language or learn how to do inheritance, abstraction, whatever, in some programming, or object-oriented versus functional. And they don't talk about things like teamwork and having the courage to go talk to the business and having an uncomfortable conversation when you're an introvert and how that can change the entire dynamic of the project.
And it really does, again, come down to the leadership because, in my example, in your examples, what you need before anything else is some buy-in, right? You need buy-in from the top. You need buy-in from the top person and have them say, yes, I know this is going to be a rough road. Yes, I know people are going to get uncomfortable. I know people are even going to get mad. And you know what? People might even leave. But this is the right way to do things. We start now. If the leader doesn't say that, it's not going to happen, right? I'm walking out of any place I go the same. I am who I am. I give my recommendations. Whether anybody wants to take my recommendations and grow as a leader is wholly dependent on them, not me. They decide they want to do it. They're going to do it. If all of a sudden somewhere midstream, they're like, this is too hard. I feel more comfortable not doing it this way. There's not a thing I can do about it. And so, once again, the resistance is overcome by and large, in a large part of professional life, by leadership.
And what does Seth say? A big theme of that conference in New York, I think maybe your biggest takeaway is sometimes it's not for you.
Sometimes it's not for you. Yeah. That was enlightening. And I have to keep reminding myself that as as I chase down clients or I try to, it's really funny. I had the conversation literally just the other day. It was one of the first times I got serious pushback. And I understood it was coming from a place of fear, of resistance. It wasn't coming from a place of logic. And I literally said, as I'm watching the contract go away in my mind, I finally had to say, look, it sounds like you're very comfortable with the way you're doing things. If you're comfortable with the way you're doing things, that's fine. We're not going to spend an hour together to check a box. You're good. And I meant it. I was like, I'm not going to waste your hour. This is not for you. Sure enough, what happened was, well, I don't believe you. You think I should do it this way? I'm like, well, of course I think you should do it this way. That's what you paid me for. Come in and tell you how I think you should do it. So it's freeing and liberating in my mind. Like, hey, look, it's not for you. It's a tough pill to swallow, but let's stop wasting our time. You know, and that can be for your employees. You're allowed to say this isn't for you. I think the next episode we should go right into, because he has two books, right? And how do we combat the resistance? And it's about being a professional. Why don't we just kind of tease that and talk about how we combat it by being a professional for the next time around?
How do we combat it? Exactly. I'm stuck, man. This episode's got me stuck now.
There it is. So tune in. Tune in to the next episode.
Boom.
See ya.
Thanks again for listening to the Leadership in Tech podcast series. Today, Errol and Zach discussed topics and ideas from the book, The War of Art, Break Through the Blocks, and Win Your Inner Creative Battles by Stephen Pressfield. You can find The War of Art for sale on Amazon.com as well as on shop.blackirishbooks.com. That's shop.blackirishbooks.com. You can find out more about the author, Stephen Pressfield, and his many other books he has written on stephenpressfield.com. The Leadership in Tech podcast is brought to you by the Technology OnRamp. If you're looking for more comprehensive show notes, an episode outline, or just to learn more about the Leadership in Tech podcast or the Technology OnRamp, go to www.techonramp.com. You can find all of our episodes there, as well as our blog, info on our nonprofit, The Tech OnRamp, and much more. This show is available on YouTube, iTunes, Google Play Music, SoundCloud, and Player FM. For more about the companies involved in making this possible, check out Salt.io at www.salt.io and Leader193 at www.leader193.com. Tune in next Thursday for the next episode of the Leadership in Tech podcast, episode 48, The War of Art, Part 2, presented to you by the Technology OnRamp.
Tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job, but I don't like your attitude. I don't like your attitude.